This is Pushing the Odds on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Las Vegas, here's Matt Perrault.
Remember when Philadelphia was chanting, "We want Boston," before Boston had even knocked out the Milwaukee Bucks? One of those be careful what you wish for situations as Boston takes care of Philadelphia in just five games. 4-1 last night with a 2-point victory, sending Boston back into the Eastern Conference Finals. We head to the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans hotline. Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, a great subscription site that started up a couple of months ago by Greg Bedard and his great staff. Brian, a writer covering the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, joining us here on Pushing the Odds. Brian, Matt Perrault, how are you?
Good, man. How's it going?
Well, it's going great after last night. That was a hell of a ride. A lot of fun watching Brad Stevens and the Celtics do that to the Philadelphia 76ers. In your mind, what's your biggest takeaway from the 5-game victory for Boston over Philly?
I really think it's, I guess going into the series, I was pretty surprised by, I don't know if you want to call it overrating the Sixers or underrating the Celtics, just in terms of how heavily favored Philly was going into that series. Probably a little bit of both. I guess the matchup, how well the Celtics match up with the Sixers core for obviously just now and the long term with Al Horford spending time on Simmons and Embiid, with Baines kind of holding his own against Embiid, with, you know, the likes of Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown, Tatum being able to hold their own against Simmons. It's really, they seem to have just like the sense of versatility there to, you know, slow down those guys. And that's something that, you know, obviously came in handy in a big way in this series, but also should come in handy for the long haul, given, you know, how much I expect both of these teams to, you know, be facing each other in the East playoffs for the upcoming decade here.
What's interesting about the end of the game last night was Marcus Smart and what he had, the impact he had on the game, meaning he comes in, he's asked to guard Sharish, he causes the turnover, he then is put into a position where a drive by Tatum, three Philadelphia 76ers, including a 7'2" center, are there watching Tatum drive in. Smart doesn't watch, he drives, he gets after the offensive board and lays it in, which was a huge play. And then he gets fouled. He tried to miss both free throws. He ends up hitting one of two. And then he's the one that picks off the pass from Ben Simmons to ice the game. To me, that's just another indication of how good Brad Stevens is when it comes to getting guys to really rise to the level of to the occasion and play huge in key moments. Shouldn't he be getting more talk today for what he did late in the game?
No question, man. It's actually the... The column I wrote off of last night's game at the Boston Sports Journal was off of Smart, because, like, you know, his numbers won't get him the headlines in that game. I think he finished with, you know, 14 points, you know, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, which is a far cry from the nights that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum had offensively. But, right, just the final 2 minutes of the game when the Celtics came back down from 4 points, like, Smart literally did a little bit of everything, whether it was the offensive putback, the pass to Tatum, the stop on Saric, the denying J.J. Redick the inbounds play when they, you know, on that Embiid post-up. He literally had his hands in everything, and it kind of cemented just, again, like the how much Brad Stevens and how much Danny Ainge, you know, they rave about this guy, and it's kind of stuff like that. It's for, with all, you know, the money on the table there, his versatility was, you know, better than anyone else on the floor in those moments. And so, I mean, I think it's really interesting to see, you know, he's due for a new contract this summer as a restricted free agent. The Celtics obviously have another breakout star in the backcourt with Terry Rozier this postseason. They're probably not going to be able to pay both guys long term. So, you know, combine that with Smart's, you know, off-court issues earlier in the year where, he punched the mirror and sidelined himself for a few weeks. So it looked like he was going to be costing himself a bunch of money, but performances like last night make it so where, you know, the Celtics, you know, that's a role player investment. That's a guy, a fifth guy in the floor you want in late game situations for the long term here, and might be, you know, kind of tipping the six scales back in his favor on that front.
So do you see Boston wanting to pony up to keep him next year?
I mean, I think it's all going to be based on the market, Matt. I think the good news for the Celtics is a couple of things. Number one, there's not a ton of teams with like a lot of salary cap space this summer that also need a point guard, mm-hmm. and point guard is one of the deepest positions in the league. So I don't think a young rebuilding team necessarily wants to invest $50 million a year in Marcus Smart because he has obviously plenty of limitations in the offensive end, and his value is going to be limited if he's not surrounded by the right supporting cast. With that said, I also think so. I would expect as long as his price tag stays reasonable, I think closer to like mid-level, $8 to $10 million level, I think that's definitely the right price point for the Suns to be like, hey, we're going to pay this guy now. We're going to hopefully get him under contract long term, get him back here for one more year of this core, and then we can make a decision there. Mm-hmm. If we want to move forward with Rozier, we trade him, and if we can't afford Rozier, then he's our sixth, seventh man off the bench moving forward.
Brian Robb, Boston Sports Show, is our guest here on Pushing the Odds. So yesterday we found out that the coaches poll, the coaches coach of the year vote, which is compiled of 30 votes from the coaches. I don't care that Dwayne Casey won it from Toronto. He got the one seed and did a great job. But how do you explain why Brad Stevens did not get a single vote from one of his peers for coach of the year?
Yeah, that was bizarre, man. That was a pretty big topic of conversation around the Garden yesterday. And, I mean, I'll say this, number one, I feel like this award really has not gotten any publicity before.
I don't remember. Well, it's only 2 years old, so that's why. It's brand new.
Amazing. So even last year, right, so that makes even more sense. But even I feel like it got more acclaim this year, largely because I think the guy that I went to, Dwayne Casey, is someone whose job is in jeopardy. So that makes sense on that front. So, I mean, and I guess on that, of why Stevens didn't get a vote there, I think it's a situation where a lot of these guys, I feel like, who do vote, they might just, they come from different coaching trees across the league. And mm-hmm. they might, I mean, I feel like part of it could just be feeling a loyalty to, a guy you worked for before. And obviously Stevens really doesn't have any of those guys, but it was, it's certainly bizarre that he didn't get, a single vote there. But, I think Danny Ainge talked about it this morning on the radio as well. He doesn't care. I don't think anyone should care. And as far as, it's pretty clear cut what his value is. And I think coaches around the league probably hold him in, very high regard. They just, for whatever reason, just wanted to give someone else a nod on for that particular, just having one vote for that front.
I simply don't get it, to be quite honest. But again, it doesn't
make
any
sense. That's my best explanation. That's all I got for you.
It doesn't make any sense, but it is one of those, it could have been petty. It could have been, well, I'll let somebody else vote for Brad. Whatever the reason is, it was regular season versus, postseason. But I think everybody could watch the series, what happened last night. And it's a big reason why I brought up Utah with Stockton and Malone when it comes to Philadelphia. And everyone's just assuming that Philadelphia is going to be a championship team in the future, including Ben Simmons saying to Joel Embiid, look at my fingers, there's going to be lots of rings on there. Why are we so confident that Philadelphia is going to be this team that everyone's going to have to be reckoning with, given the fact that they're, A, very young, B, I'm not sure Brett Brown's the right coach for them, and C, both Simmons and Embiid have major, major issues with staying healthy.
Yeah, I think all those concerns are warranted. I mean, Brett Brown, I think what we saw, he's it's a great story of what, he had to go through down there the last few years. And for him to get this team, to this point this year was a pretty impressive turnaround. With that said, I think he, as long as a lot of first-time coaches kind of suffer in the playoffs, suffer from just being a little too tentative, waiting a little too long to make changes that you need to make. Like the T.J. McConnell switch was a great switch. He was arguably the best offensive player for the Sixers in that series, just in terms of how he kind of ran circles around the Celtics in those games. Making that switch in game four, that's too late. You can't make that switch when you're down 3-0. You have to do a little more proactively. And that's something that Brad Stevens had an issue with his first two postseasons too, and has kind of adapted well to the point now where he made last night got Jaylen Brown back in that starting five, putting Semi Ojeleye in a 2-2 series against the Bucks into the starting lineup, kind of being proactive about that stuff. So, you know, Brown impressed me. That the way the Sixers played last night impressed me, with the fight they showed. But, yeah, he might not be, you know, he's not a sure thing to be the right guy for this team. And then the Simmons and Embiid, you know, concerns are valid. I mean, Embiid, you know, that he was probably as healthy as you could hope for this year. Obviously, he had the freak stuff in the face late in the year. But, like, I still feel like he's a ticking time bomb as far as his, you know, leg injuries go there. And then Simmons, I mean, that's a guy who needs to just take a 2,000 shots in the gym every day this summer until further notice. Because, I mean, he was a net negative for them in that series. Like, straight up. Like, the Celtics had the weapons to put on him there, but teams are going to learn more and more about, like, the best ways to defend him as his NBA career continues, and he needs to make them adapt. He needs to show them something else, or else it's going to be someone who, you know, he might be putting up triple-doubles on a nightly basis, but he's still going to be a liability to this team once the playoffs rolls around. So all that together, like, the Sixers are going to be good. They're going to be, you know, I think top four in the East for the foreseeable future, but just how high their ceiling is with this group, you know, I feel like that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I agree. Let me play, Brian, let me play, you know, fantasy GM for a second. And I believe that Tatum and Brown should be untouchable. That's just my personal opinion with how good these guys are going to be. But I think Terry Rozier, who is a tremendous player, and I think he should be incredibly valued right now and held on to back up Kyrie Irving next year. I'm wondering if you could potentially use him as a trade chip and then combine some of the picks in 2019, because the, you know, 18's not that great for Boston when it comes to assets, but 19's ridiculous. They've got multiple first-round picks to play with in 2019. What do you think they could put together for a package if they leave Brown and Tatum out of it? Could they go potentially and entice a San Antonio or a New Orleans to potentially part with one of their superstars with Kawhi or potentially with the Brow?
You know, I think the Brow, I think, is off the table unless Jaylen Brown or Tatum is involved. I just think that he's too good. The run they had this year, you know, kind of, you know, if anything, pushed them in the direction of, like, you know, let's keep things here, let's keep things rolling here. And as long as he isn't pushing his way out, I don't think, you know, that dream might be, you know, dead for the next year or two.
Right.
Even if those guys are available. Leonard obviously is going to be the focus this summer for the league with good reason. And it's going to be fascinating because, you know, the trade packages for guys on the last year in their deals just around the league the last few years, whether it's, you know, Paul George, you know, Jimmy Butler had a couple years left, Kyrie had a couple years left. They've been largely underwhelming compared to what people thought they would be.
Right.
So I do think, but whether it gets to a level where, you know, Rozier and picks enough, like, Rozier has been very good. He's got, I think, can be an above average starting point guard in this league. But I'm not sure that's going to be enough to entice San Antonio, even if you include that, you know, Sacramento pick and potentially the Memphis pick there, that you're not really sure how high those are going to land. Mm-hmm. But with that said, like, I'm kind of with you. I mean, I've been of the mind that Jason Tatum should probably be off the table unless we're talking about Anthony Davis. And then Jaylen Brown, that's the name that you consider for Kawhi, obviously, with the other, assuming that some picks have to be attached, but with the way he's playing and with the question marks about Kawhi's health, like,
I agree.
Think longer and harder about that now. Like, he's under control for another couple of years. You know, payroll management is going to be a serious issue with this team, where if you bring in, you know, Kawhi Leonard, you're probably not going to have, you can't pay him, Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford.
Right.
What they there. So that's like, who leaves? Like, I mean, Horford's like, before the playoffs started, Horford, you can move on from Horford. Now you're seeing what Horford is in the playoffs again.
Right.
And it's like, well, that's a pretty important piece here. So it's a really tough question, Matt, and I think, you know, they're going to have some tough conversations this summer in terms of just how aggressive they want to be on the Leonard front.
I would agree. Brian, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Got to run. That's Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, joining us on the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Hotline. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. More next.